Colleges and universities are raising concerns about provisions in the House Republican tax overhaul. They say those changes will increase the cost of college for many students and their families while also cutting into endowments at private schools. The plan would impose a 1.4% excise tax on college endowments at private universities, at which the endowment is more than $100,000 per student. That's a small percentage on a big number. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Illinois Wesleyan University President Eric Jensen about higher ed concerns.
Well, first off, I think this bill's in flux. My understanding is that the new, today's version or yesterday's version of H.R. 1 had upped that limit to $250,000 per student. To put that in perspective, $100,000 per student means that we're going to draw roughly 5% in income off of that, and we're going to use that for scholarships. So $100,000 in endowment generates $5,000 in scholarships per student. That's not exactly consistent with the picture of these wealthy institutions that are sitting on their resources. It's true. We're financially very secure. We have an endowment that's over $200 million. But when you actually think about how that's used, at $5,000 per student, it's hardly excessive. We give something like $25,000 in average scholarships per student per year. And so this endowment that apparently is big enough to be taxed is in fact generating something like a fifth of the total support that we give to our students. Our net tuition on average for an entering student last year was about $21,000, even though our stated tuition was $46,000. So there's a picture of elite, unaffordable institutions that are hoarding their resources. In our case, nothing could be farther from the truth.
So where is a healthy limit then for that sort of calculation? What qualifies as super wealthy that should be taxed, and where is the cutoff for people who are comfortable but really not doing much more than getting by?
Well, I think it's bigger than you might think. Think about a place like Grinnell. Grinnell has a famously big endowment for a place that's not much bigger than us because they had Warren Buffett, in large part because they had Warren Buffett managing their portfolio, and he appears to be pretty good at what he does.
Sweet.
Yeah. So they've got more than $2 billion. We've got more than $200 million, and they've got a student body that's roughly the same size. And so that means that instead of $5,000 per student, if they chose to use it all for scholarships, they could use it at $50,000 per student. What that lets them do is open the door very wide to students that have very little ability to pay. They can offer students essentially full scholarships and bear it out of that endowment and have a little bit left over for some of the things that they need to use an endowment for. So even a big-sounding endowment like $2 billion isn't really that big if it's put to use in service of students. And then, well, is $10 billion big? Is $60 billion or whatever the Harvard number, is that a big number? Yes. And then, in fact, there's even some evidence that some schools have been using offshore, that the Paradise Papers are showing that some schools are using offshore tax havens as a way of sheltering some of these very large reserves. I think the question is more about purpose than amount. And if it's really about hoarding endowments for endowment's sake, I think we may have an issue.
So per student is not really the right way to look at it. You have to look at other uses for this.
I think per student is a reasonable metric, but I think that the number that you might think of is fairly large. If I were to say to the average person on the street that Illinois Wesleyan would qualify at this $100,000 in endowment per student, one might think that that's a mark of a wealthy institution. Now, let's be clear, we are fortunate to be financially secure, but the amount of income that's actually thrown off by that to be able to use on behalf of students is much, much smaller than people think. It's kind of like an endowment is a little bit like a savings account because you want to have a fund for a rainy day, but you don't want to draw on it if you don't have to. An endowment is a little bit like a pension account, although pension accounts you usually draw more than you would off an endowment because
you expect
pension,
to exhaust.
Yeah,
them
you expect to exhaust
by the time you kick the bucket.
And so we draw much less than that than would typically be the case when it comes time to start drawing on a pension, because we want to preserve that principle forever. But we do want to draw on the earnings and use it for the things that we need to use. It's a little bit like the, you know, you hear about student debt, or you hear about students who go to school and don't graduate, and somehow that brush is used to tar an entire industry. And you know the truth. You know, if you're thinking about student debt, something like 10% of the kids coming out of high school go to for-profit institutions. Something like 20% of all the loans go to those kids, and something like 40% of all the defaults come from those kids. They also are highly unlikely actually to graduate, and the whole point of going to school is to get that credential. So we're not like that. Illinois State's not like that. You know, there are a number of institutions that are nothing like the institutions that are responsible for the kind of junk that's being thrown around regarding, you know, this allegedly homogeneous industry. Our students have a debt that is under $30,000. That's on average, and averages can sometimes mask outliers, but that's a low number. Our students get something like $800,000 more in expected lifetime income as a result of that investment. We have default rates that are vanishingly small, about 2%. We have 95-96% of our students either employed or in graduate school within 6 months of graduation. You know, we're not that place that you hear about, and I think by extension, we're also, when you talk about the fact that we've got a $200 million endowment, we're not that sort of large holding on to the endowment sort of place that you often hear of. We're fortunate to be financially secure.
I haven't heard you actually say what level would be appropriate to tax, though.
Oh, I don't know. I think it has to do more with. The conversation initially got started because there were a number of institutions who were characterized as simply holding on to their investment and letting it grow to the extent that they could let it grow. And the question, I think,
Princeton, Amherst.
And the question is, I don't know about Amherst, Princeton. And the question is begged, well, at what point does it grow sufficiently large that you've reinvested and now you begin to use it in ways that are beneficial to society? I mean, the education is fundamentally a good for society. By training people, by allowing them to realize their full potential, we're making an investment in them that then pays dividends to the whole society. And so the idea that we as a society ought to care about getting our students educated, getting them out there and being productive members of the workforce, and therefore, I suppose, by extension, making sure that tax-advantaged endowments are put to good public use, like educating students, I think that's a more meaningful criteria than simply a dollar amount.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Eric Jensen, the president of Illinois Wesleyan University, about the implications of the tax bill on higher education. Let's frame it a different way. We mentioned Amherst, Grinnell, Princeton. They use their endowment for at least half their operating budget. How does Illinois Wesleyan stack up by that sort of measurement?
Well, our operating budget is probably 6 or 7, maybe more, times our normal endowment draw.
Not in the same league at all, then?
No, not at all. And I think most schools, if you talk to them, the schools with large endowments, I had a friend who was the president of an institution that had a little over $1 billion, they find ways to spend it. They commit it in ways that are consistent with their mission, but are nonetheless our obligations. And so if it's not all spent on student assistance, it may be spent on faculty or staff positions. It may be spent on general operating expenses for facilities and so forth, all consistent with the mission, but also obligated. So they rely on tuition revenue in the same way that we do.
Do you believe there ought to be regulation to encourage that sort of consideration, or to mandate that sort of consideration above and beyond a certain level?
No, I think that colleges and universities are mission-driven places, that we understand why we're there. And I think even if you spoke to, I read that Princeton made nine figures maybe, off of the pharmaceutical patents that have been developed there. Those, though, are then turned around and reinvested in ways that allow them either to generate new knowledge or to educate current students. Sometimes it's hard to see where that line would even be drawn.
So nobody is really sitting on it, in your view?
No. The cynical view that I have is that much of the sort of provisions of H.R. 1, especially as they're aimed at education, are are aimed at generating current revenue at the expense of investment. If, for example, you reduce the tax credit to parents for educating their students, well, fewer students are going to be educated than would otherwise be the case, and therefore the benefits to society that would have accrued down the road, the investment, isn't going to happen. It's a very short-sighted way of generating revenue in the short run, and I think many of the provisions of H.R. 1 are like that.
Do you pay any taxes on your endowment's investment income as of today?
No, we're a tax exempt charity, and so and as I mentioned, our endowment is based on the donations of others to us, and to the extent that we have earned through investing that the earnings from those gifts.
The bill would also force college employees to count tuition breaks they receive as income. They don't have to do that now. For those working on a PhD or with college-age kids, that's a recruiting tool for you, right?
It's a very good one. Yeah, we are not going to pay salaries that approximate our corporate competition in town. And so especially for those on the non-academic side, if we're competing for people in town, that's I speak to you now as someone who's had a couple of kids recently through school, and I know you're a little bit in that same situation.
Oh, yeah.
These are real dollars that are substantial hiring incentives. And, of course, for our faculty, there's two reasons that we like it. One, of course, is that this is our business. You know, we are educating students, and we want our own children to enjoy the sorts of advantages that we're conveying to others. And then, of course, it's a hiring advantage for us as well. We don't pay as much as a Research One school would pay for a host of reasons, but we do have this offsetting tuition benefit that helps. I went to an institution that didn't have that. I worked at an institution that didn't have that, and in hindsight, kind of looked longingly at that as a benefit that would have been wonderful to have received.
How much difference would you say that did make in the ability to recruit talent? Doing the A-B comparison.
Yeah, hard to say. I think part of it is that small privates like us, it's more the norm. And so we would be at a competitive disadvantage if we didn't have it. And since we do, it's kind of hard to say just quantitatively how big the advantage is.
There are some other provisions in the tax bill that colleges and universities aren't crazy about, including the end of student loan interest deductions for those paying off their student debt. What do you think that will have as an effect long term if passed?
Again, it's all these are on the margin disincentivizing the process of getting a higher education degree of some sort. I think that the bigger deductions are unfortunately concentrated amongst those who've wisely or not accumulated a great amount of debt at places like for-profits. And so I would guess that the impact is going to be different across different sectors of the broader higher ed landscape. But it can't be a good thing. You know, the notion in general that we're going to give up what could be useful investments for the sake of a little bit of short-run revenue, and this is a little bit of short-run revenue, I find that troubling.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Eric Jensen is the president of Illinois Wesleyan University. He's in the studio with us. Let's pivot to enrollment. It's been a tough year for Illinois' public colleges and universities, with a few exceptions. Enrollment is down around the state, which is a net exporter of college students. How does Illinois Wesleyan's enrollment look this fall?
We're also down a little bit. It's a cyclical business. Some years you're up, some years you're down, and this is one where, as you've said, Illinois is a hard state. I think that there's a tendency to think of, as I've said before, higher education as sort of a homogeneous mass, and it's not. The truth is that most students who go to colleges go to public colleges and universities, and the public colleges and universities in Illinois have had a tough row to hoe for the last couple of years. We've been affected by things like MAP grants and the uncertainty surrounding them. About a quarter of our students receive MAP grants, and so we, early on, as this uncertainty, as this dysfunction between the governor and the legislature was coming to full fruition, made the decision that we were going to help our students cover whatever missing MAP funds may have eventuated. And that's nice, because the financially right thing to do and the morally right thing to do coincided exactly. So we were able to step up and help our students. But the students that we didn't have yet, the ones who were thinking about coming to Illinois and were debating as to whether or not there was going to be the Illinois state system that they knew of, or whether there was going to be the MAP grant at a private school, or generally what the climate of higher ed and education was like in Illinois, I think that hurt. You know, that hurt a number of institutions.
How long will it continue to hurt?
I think Illinois is actually rebounding. I think we have a budget in place. Miracle of miracles, and there can be some long-term planning that's done. I think another thing that actually hurt us was the international climate. There was a lot of harsh rhetoric, and I think many places saw fairly significant declines in their international recruiting. And whether that's going to bounce back or not, I can't say for certainty. I'm thrilled. Since the last time we spoke, we have a new vice president, a new position, vice president of enrollment and marketing, and a new person, Leanne Hughes, in that job with a number of new staff people. And so we're actively both being more aggressive within Illinois, getting across that message that, hey, we're not afflicted in the same way that many of these institutions are. And we're also looking outside Illinois in aggressive ways. We have somebody who's in St. Louis. We have somebody who's in Denver. And we're looking at somebody in Atlanta as a way of looking at other markets.
How much is the international cohort down? How much is total enrollment down?
We're at a little under 1,700 this year, so we're down something. We're down a little bit more than we'd like to be in this instance. Our international enrollment fluctuates more than most enrollments year to year. We've had years where we've had 60 or 70 international students coming in. We've had years where we had 30, and this year was more like 30 coming in.
Okay. So is that the smallest headcount since 1988, or
we're at a relatively low level for us. I think that we could comfortably handle more students than are there right now. We have a choice. You know, what we're trying to do is create an environment that is special in a lot of ways. We want the really meaningful interaction between faculty and students, and between students themselves. And so we want to make sure that we're picking the kind of students who are going to benefit most from that environment, and who are going to benefit that environment the most. It's sort of a synergistic process. We're very happy with the incoming class. They are the test scores are just like they've always been, impressive. The high school grade point averages are impressive. We're also very diverse. We have significantly more students who self-identify as African American or Latino than in past years. And that's important, because what we do is train leaders. And the leaders in the world to come are going to be leading in a multinational, multi-ethnic, multiracial setting. And it's important that our world on campus look like that world that they're going to be the leaders of.
So if you're at 1,700 and you'd like to be at 2,000 or 2,200, what do you do? Do you have too many faculty for that number of students? And how do you adjust?
Well, I think we want to keep our eye on a long-run strategic goal. And as I said, it's a cyclical business. There are years that are up, there are years that are down. And the key thing is not to be hasty in any sort of response. I think that we want to grow. I think 2,200 is probably bigger than we'd like to be. But 1,900, 2,000, somewhere in there, that's a nice size. And so that means a reasoned, careful approach at growing enrollment to make sure that we continue to get the students that we want. One of the most interesting conversations I've had was at Heartland Community College. We're talking, our provost and vice president for enrollment and marketing and our registrar, we're talking to their counterparts at Heartland, with Rob Widmer and I being sort of either spectators or brokers, I'm not sure what, at this meeting, and talking about how we might ease the path into Illinois Wesleyan in ways that are appropriate for us and for the Heartland students, who are either 1 year in or have gotten their AA. We are really part of the fabric of this town. Bloomington, Normal, you know, Illinois Wesleyan, the number of people I meet as I come around to various functions who are alums, who have this sort of deep affection for the place, it's palpable. And Heartland is such an amazing place. There's something like 5,000 degree-seeking students there at any one time. We'd really love to work out a way where we can stitch some of those students into the fabric of our place in a way that is consistent with what we want to do, that also benefits some local students in that way. So there are lots of ways to increase our enrollment. I was just at a function in Kenwood at two alumni couple's house. They have a friend who's the director of the Obama Library Project in the South Side. And so we had an event for prospective students and their parents and for alums to come and listen to him give a brief presentation and sort of talk. And we're gonna get 3-4 students from that we probably exposed to something they wouldn't have seen otherwise. And I think it's a baseball cliche, small ball. You know, you get somebody on first and you get them around. It's 3 students here and 4 students there and 6 students there. We're small, and we have an incoming class that's, you know, in the neighborhood of 500. And so influencing the class up and down a little bit in that way is what we need to do. So I think the key is a careful, reasoned approach, and we don't need to resort to anything drastic in response to short-run fluctuations. We have a supportive board of trustees. We have a substantial endowment. And we're in the place that we need to be. We just have to have a little bit of focus on what the next 2 or 3 or 4 years of recruiting looks like.
So you're going to stay the course regarding staff and infrastructure and eat the loss that those 200 to 300 kids who aren't coming temporarily produce.
Yeah, short run staffing changes, ups and downs as a result of changes in enrollments in particular classes or something. That's normal. So there'll be some change in terms of there always is in any given year. But I think we shouldn't construe sort of short run responses to. In terms of visiting positions hired or something like that to strategic responses.
If you do have staff adjustments, it would be attrition and not through riffing.
That's the plan, yeah.
Illinois Wesleyan University President Eric Jensen speaking with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. You're listening to Sound Ideas on GLT.